the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. We have a special guest today, Stephen Kent. I'm here with my co-host, Brooke Medina. We're going to talk Fox News, a big new movie coming out called Bombshell. And we'll look at Greenland, the ICE veto by Governor Cooper, and maybe a few other vetoes in the budget going on, and possibly delve into Greenland. And will Mike Pence be on the 2020 ticket with Donald Trump?
Yeah, it's going to be a fun show. So Stephen is joining us today. Stephen is the spokesperson for Young Voices and is a political commentator and writer for the Washington Examiner, which is a great, great outlet. I really enjoy reading their stuff and reading what you've written there. And you actually just wrote something that was published earlier today, and it's titled Bombshell Trailer Expands on the Fox News Palace Intrigue. And so I think that's kind of interesting. So kind of share with our listeners what your point, what's going on here. This movie's about to come out, and what's the basic premise, and what do you think of it?
Yeah, so we just got a teaser trailer for this movie called Bombshell, which is going to be coming out December 20th from Lionsgate Studios, and it stars a really great cast, mm-hmm. right? Charlize Theron, Nicole Kidman, portraying some very notable, legendary Fox News personalities. You're going to have Charlize Theron playing Megyn Kelly, and she looks like her.
I saw that trailer. Yeah, I was impressed
stunning.
By that.
Pretty stunning what they did there with some makeup. And then Nicole Kidman is going to be playing Gretchen Carlson. Now, this looks to be taking place around 2015, 2016, sort of at the tail end of Megyn Kelly's time at Fox News and Gretchen Carlson's, amidst a mountain of evidence that was piling up against Roger Ailes, sexual abuse and harassment in the workplace. Lots of lawsuits piled up against him by the end of 2016 when he eventually resigned and then died shortly thereafter. There's currently a series out on Showtime right now about this called The Loudest Voice, and it focuses on the rise of Fox News from 1996 all the way up to Roger Ailes' sort of public image demise with these lawsuits and a book that came out from Gretchen Carlson when she left Fox. Bombshell, we don't know much about it besides that it looks like it's just going to be like an A-list version of this story in an hour and 30 minutes instead of 8 episodes that was on Showtime. I think it's about the same story. I'm mm-hmm. not sure really how it's going to differ besides that it's going to focus very, very much on the women who had Roger Ailes' accusations rather than where this Showtime show kind of mm-hmm. focused on the rise of Fox, and right. this was sort of a component of the story.
Okay, so that's, you know what I find kind of fascinating about all of this, not just this particular movie, but there seems to be a monetization of the Me Too movement in the form of film and media, and I don't think the monetization is probably just a natural outflow of this being in the news all the time now, ever since Harvey Weinstein, Matt Lauer, Charlie Rose, Roger Ailes. So all of this is going on. But where do you see this moment going after, like, we're already making movies. Oftentimes sure. when big historic events or cultural events took place, it took a couple of decades before they were starting to make movies out of these things. But now it's been a mere few years. Do you see this as unearthing even more sort of intrigue into Fox? Will there be even deeper digging, or is Fox just kind of the punching bag at the moment?
Yeah, well, so Fox is a punching bag, and it is a boogeyman for the left, people in Hollywood, and the left more broadly across the political the political world. But look, I mean, is it monetization of Me Too? I don't think so. It's a huge story. It's a huge story that this kind of abuse was systematic and baked into the Fox News model for so long. They've taken a lot of steps to mitigate and change that. And look, this is across media as well. This kind of stuff was showing up at NBC. There were incidents at CNN, MSNBC. This is systematic, and it comes to, I think, just like the ivory tower world, right? College mm-hmm. campuses, media, Hollywood, this is all out there. Gretchen Carlson absolutely deserves to have her side of that story told and to write a book about it. A huge trial for her life, and people will buy it. She was beloved by people from 6 to 9 a.m. for a handful of years. So, you know, I think it is rightfully out there. It's going to be out there. But I think what is important about this is, why is Fox News suddenly in all these dramatizations? Why are there multiple programs now about Fox News, News Corporation? You have Bombshell coming out in December. You have The Loudest Voice on Showtime, which might get a second season. I'm not sure how they do it once Roger is passed in the show. And then they also have Succession on HBO, which is not directly about Fox News, but it is a dramatization of News Corp and 21st Century Fox under Rupert Murdoch, who is now the chairman of Fox News post Roger Ailes. And the whole show is about, you know, some guy who runs a media conglomerate with his kids, and they own a conservative number one news station. They own a bunch of theme parks and a couple Hollywood studios. You know, that is the real life News Corp. And people, I think, are just looking at all of that Fox News has accomplished culturally and politically and want to ascribe that to why we have Trump. That's the part that's not a coincidence. We have Donald Trump as president, and they need somebody to blame for this rather than, I don't know, Hillary Clinton.
Right. Or white evangelicals. There's that too. Yeah.
I think, you know, if you want to blame somebody, say you're mad at Donald Trump, you want to blame somebody for the Trump presidency. I'm a little bit older than some of you in here, and I remember back in the 80s and 90s, Trump was all the rage in the media, whether it was the tabloid media. But there was, I mean, a larger segment of what you'd call more traditional journalism paid attention a lot to Donald Trump, what he was doing, his bankruptcies, his casino projects, his hotel projects, his just whole flamboyance in Manhattan and New York was always a big story, his delving into his personal life, his marriages and divorces. So sometimes when I think of, you know, Donald Trump, he's really a media creation. So, you know, they rail against Donald Trump, but in so many ways to me, he's this media creation that they really created. And now they can't destroy him. It's almost like the Frankenstein aspect, you know. So there's like, you know, someone brought up this whole idea of narcissism on cable news, and it's really bad. And but to me, it's kind of ironic that we sort of call Trump narcissists when they're just as narcissistic.
Well, we I think as a culture, in the lack of having a monarch in this country, we're always looking for new ways to have royals so that we don't just have to look across the sea and be jealous of their beautiful kings and queens. That's part
the
of
trailer park royals.
It's part of what we do here is create new kinds of royalty, and I think that we are in this moment where media conglomerates and the people who run them, the Silicon Valley types, are these sort of weird new forms of royalty that we have always like looked to as, you know, they kind of have their stuff together. They are wise. They know what's coming. And we're sort of seeing that all fall apart now with Silicon Valley being really, one, being shown to be malicious in some of their motives, and then two, also just being shown to be completely inept. They're just a bunch of 20-somethings who stumbled into fame and success and fortune atop a couple of like decent ideas regarding social media. And now, I mean, they're being dragged in front of Congress because they're like governing the way that the world works now, right? And then all these legacy media companies, they're sort of stumbling from one acquisition to the next, like Pac-Man eating the ghost in the tunnel. But what you don't really realize is that they are also running away from trying to be gobbled up by other media companies. They're just trying to survive. They don't have this grand vision of how the world should work or what kind of news we should have. They're just businesses, and they're trying to survive. And these, all these slew of shows that are all out about this, I think that that's sort of the thing that's tying it together is we think of these companies as having a plan, but they're just trying to survive, and they're just trying to make it from one day to the next. Very different narrative.
Well, and that kind of goes back to what I was getting at with the monetization of Me Too. It wasn't to lambast Carlson for making a book or anything like that. I think that though it's a natural outflow of what's going on in our culture, and so naturally it's going to receive a lot of media attention, and people are interested in these stories because, to be honest with you, I think it resonates with the larger population in their own personal experiences, and they see what some of these females have gone through even at Fox News and find some way to identify with their own personal stories. And so it sells in a way. But it's interesting, though, because this is this elitism, though, in the media, where they get to, they're gatekeepers, they get to commandeer the narrative. You talked about Silicon Valley and how they get to commandeer how social media operates and functions. Do you see that being disrupted in the near future, whether it's through Congress intervening as they continue to ask them to come and testify before these committees? What's your forecast on?
Gosh, I mean,
on all of this.
my forecast was, when I was on Spectrum with Tim Boyum at the beginning of this year, that life is only going to get harder for Silicon Valley and these media companies as Congress starts to use sort of their victimization complex to go after them. And you see this on the right and the left. They all are mad at Silicon Valley and the media companies for their own reasons. And it's just that they can't make everybody like them. And I think that at the end of the day, like, that's what I look at, is that we just have sort of this victimhood culture across our politics, where if people aren't on board with your ideas, it's because you're being sabotaged or somebody's not letting you get your message out. But everybody can get their message out today. We're sitting right here. Nobody's censoring us. But I think at the end of the day, we just don't recognize that people genuinely disagree in this country about outcomes, about politics, and they're not being manipulated. They're not being forced to believe one thing or another. They just disagree.
What about, Stephen, just, you know, you might use YouTube and Prager videos as an example, but there's been an actual documentation of groups being censored. What are ways to resolve that, besides maybe just the market and saying, oh, I'm just going to boycott YouTube now, or I'm not going to go on that platform? Because really, there, I think there's a disadvantage from a corporate entity here when they're, you know, taking these sort of videos and either shadow banning or disallowing any access to having them on their platform. There's got to be some sort of, to me, some sort of resolution than just saying, well, that's just the market.
Well, for me, I'm a market liberal. I think it should be a free-for-all. That's what I think.
So
I think
that's the solution. Google, YouTube, they can censor anything they want and no consequences.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. I mean, that's what I think should be done. Yes. I think it should be a free-for-all. That makes the market open. That puts everything out there, and people can choose, live and die by what they want to. You know, here in reality, I don't know what the solution is. Like, there are so many examples of like hard censorship, and then there's examples of things that are perceived to be censorship, but were really just one person at a company going rogue within YouTube and marking something off so that people can't watch it. And then their bosses step in and they go, you can't do that. You know, a young 20-something who just really hates conservatives. There are examples of both. Yeah. And you also have far lefties who get knocked off of YouTube as well because they want to overthrow the state, right? You have Antifa characters who have YouTube shows as well, and they would like to have an anarchy. And they are also finding themselves removed from these platforms because their message is kind of violent. And they are not happy about that either. If you get on some sort of left world podcast, you can find them being like, you know, we can't let them go after some of these conservative hosts because they're going to come after us next. And for me, that is where the truth lies. You just shouldn't be engaged in this business of picking winners and losers at all.
I tend to agree with that. I think that it should just, if people aren't satisfied with what Google is prioritizing in the search results or what they're finding on YouTube, I mean, there are other outlets out there. And until people demand something else, you know, Google will eventually take a signal. If enough people exit us out of it. But I know there have been concerns about there being a monopoly set up, but I'd say that's where you distinguish between whether it's a government propped up monopoly or if it's just something that's been naturally occurring.
There's just so much faux outrage out there. I mean, you've got a bunch of liberals out there saying they're no longer going to go to SoulCycle anymore, right? Because because of the CEO holding a fundraiser for Trump. They're not going to stop going to SoulCycle. Maybe five of them are, but all of them are going next week, and they're all going to get their workouts and have a great, great yuppie time.
Just like I enjoy my Starbucks coffee.
and frankly, the right does this as well with their social media platforms, YouTube, Google. They're all still using them, and Google will take a hint when people start changing their behavior seriously. Where I think we should be going after companies like this is when they are helping to prop up authoritarian regimes, striking deals with countries like China to actually censor opposition on Google and YouTube, Facebook. Unforgivable. I don't think that should be coming from a Western country like ours. We should not be participating in that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's a reminder that there are a lot of corporations out there that are not friendly to markets. And, you know, that's just something that we all have to keep in mind.
But aren't they friendly to markets if they're chasing the dollars in China? Like,
I think yes, in a way. But I mean, in terms of what, if you just look at a market as a sort of a materialistic base of just, you know, getting revenue, then I don't know if that's necessarily this, you know, my understanding of markets. Markets really I think, point to something higher than just sort of the bottom line.
Fair enough. Yeah. Know.
But yeah, I get your point too. I mean, your point's valid as well. I mean, they think they're opening up a new market and they're not concerned about human rights abuses, or they're not concerned about a greater freedom in that country. So let's transition to Governor Roy Cooper in his recent veto. Was it yesterday, I believe.
I am pulling up the article
around 2
right
p.m.
now.
I think
it was yesterday.
His veto of the ICE.
Which would have been August 21st.
Detainer, a law that is going to, would increase cooperation in North Carolina between ICE and sheriffs across the state. So obviously there's a lot of people that are outraged. You're just talking about faux outrage. But I think there may be some legitimate outrage here, because I think people are sick, just by and large, of criminal illegal aliens. I mean, it's one thing to be illegal in this country and you're breaking the law, but I think criminal illegal aliens is a much bigger problem in the United States, and something that we haven't dealt with. Something Trump, to his credit, made a big part of his campaign in 2016 when he had all those. There were a lot of things that I kind of had pause with Trump, but one thing I really admired is, because you weren't really allowed to do it, he went out with these victims, many of them African American, who the family members were killed by illegal aliens. He had them up on stage with them. He gave them a platform when the media would not give them a platform at all. And I thought it was very powerful visually to kind of tell their story. So anyways, we have here in North Carolina, Cooper saying that this is an unnecessary law and is only going to divide the state. So I don't know if Brooke or Stephen, you have any thoughts on this, but it's something that's weighing a lot on my mind.
Okay, well, I'll dive in with one thing. So you mentioned that the measure would increase cooperation between sheriffs and their localities. That would mandate cooperation between sheriffs and their localities, or they would be removed from office by DOJ. That doesn't sound like cooperation to me. That sounds like strong-arming. And I think we have to be really careful about this. There are some horror stories, and there was the one in Charlotte where, you know, an illegal individual was apprehended after an assault, then released after ICE didn't come and get him in time. And then he committed an offense again twice.
There's a lot of
twice
examples out there.
These things happen. But what I don't agree with is mandating from Raleigh what Charlotte needs to be like and what Charlotte sheriffs need to do. He was elected to do the job the way that he campaigned on. People voted for him because he said he was going to do these things. We're talking about Gary McFadden. If that's the kind of culture Charlotte wants to have, and that's the kind of policing they want to have, I believe that they should be able to run that way. And I think that this is sort of a mandate coming down from the top and from the Trump culture about sort of creating these divisions like this. And then you have the legislature. They really want to get back at Mecklenburg. Like, let's be honest. There's a lot of antipathy.
Yeah, ever since HB2, there has been.
Between the legislature and Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And I think that they want to find any way that they can to exacerbate these issues. I have not seen this to be a crisis that needs to be dealt with by Raleigh. That's my stance on it.
I think that there is something to be said about, I'm sympathetic to both points of view as someone who, well, we all value federalism to a great degree, right? I mean, things need to be handled at the local level and so much as possible, except that there are times when I think a higher governing authority needs to step in if there are violations of human rights or constitutional violations and things like that. Under this circumstance, you use the example, which was in the Wall Street Journal as well, of that man that was here illegally.
Yeah, Louis Panetta Anchetta.
Oh, wow, that's an interesting name. But he was accused of, I don't know, or convicted of rape and child sex abuse. And so there are people here legally and illegally that commit such crimes. I think that the dividing line for me is more along the lines of just him refusing to treat somebody else with human dignity. It's not necessarily the being here illegally component, but if that's the best way, that the most effective way to remove him from the country so that he's not a threat any longer to others.
I'm so torn on this because, again, like you hear a lot in the immigration debate, particularly between libertarians and conservatives, right? That, you know, immigrants by and large are not shown to be more violent than actual, native-born Americans. There is no trend there. Mm-hmm. They start more businesses. They are by and large, they stay out of these sort of situations. And the idea of sort of getting into this situation where Raleigh is now going to control immigration law where they previously haven't over a handful of incidents, I would equate to the gun violence issue, and I would equate to the mass shootings issue. You know, by and large, gun violence is going down. By and large, gun owners are not violent. They follow the law. Are we going to overreact because of a pocket of instances and infringe on people's liberty, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I believe is sort of the tension here. But, you know, with this instance with Panetta and Charlotte, it really blows my mind, right, that he can be apprehended three times and commit multiple assaults after every release, and he's not gone. And I don't know what to think about that. I don't know what to think about that because it conflicts with my view that we should not be forcing ICE cooperation with localities. I think that is just the way Charlotte's going to be if that's what they want to do. But I don't know. You can vote the guy out if you don't like him. You can rally people to get Gary McFadden out of office. I just don't want Raleigh to control the way it works.
So, Stephen, let me just ask you this.
Yeah.
Let's say that, you know, Charlotte says, and there's obviously other sanctuary cities out there, and say, we're not going to cooperate with federal law enforcement in any way. We're a sanctuary city. Should the federal government, should there be some consequences in terms of turning off the spigot to federal dollars to some of these cities?
Well, that's certainly been proposed, hasn't it?
Oh, certainly. I mean, the same thing, you know, even the Trump administration has talked about turning off the spigot of federal, not going to happen, but federal dollars to colleges that are violating free speech.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
It's a good question because, look, if you're going to come out and say, you know, we're not for the rule of law here in Charlotte, then, you know, the federal government has a mandate and a responsibility to say, hey, we can't give you any more money.
I think if it was this clear cut, the Supreme Court would have already weighed in and made clear like where the lines are. I think this is really a contentious issue between federal and state government, even all the way down to city, and we don't have a clear legal answer for what is right and what is wrong under the Constitution here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's just the truth of it. Should they cut off federal dollars? I guess they could, right? I guess there's nothing stopping them from doing that, but I don't know if that would run into a judicial issue.
Oh, it certainly would run into a judicial issue, but I think, you know, there, to me, I mean, this is ultimately a rule of law issue, and I think there has to be a level of, you know, if you're under this, if you're under sort of this magnet of the Constitution, you're under the rule of law, you know, immigration, largely understood, and I know there's state aspects to it, but it's largely a federal issue, and it's largely, you know, the laws are enforced by the federal government for the most part. I mean, certainly states can do things and can cooperate with the federal government, but I do think that there has to be, we have these laws in the books, there has to be an enforcement mechanism put in place to respect the rule of law. You just can't say, you know, I'm not going to nullify that law because I don't agree with it.
I don't know if the enforcement mechanism that you want is DOJ being able to remove sheriffs who don't comply with their mandates.
Yeah, I'm not saying to remove a sheriff. I would not.
Well, that's what the law says that Governor Cooper vetoed.
Right, I understand so I think, that aspect, but I do think there has to be a level of consequences. I don't know what the consequences exactly look like.
I think the consequences are political.
I don't know. I mean, because look, you have so much homogenization of people in certain areas. And if I'm just in an urban environment, I'm going to decide to nullify that law. Or if I'm in this state, I'm going to nullify this federal law. I mean, this is why we fought a civil war. And so if we're just going to start nullifying federal laws, then, you know, I don't think you can just say, well, they're just going to, those people get to decide how it's going to be that way.
Yeah. I understand some of your discomfort with this issue, but I am uncomfortable as well with the remedy that was offered forward by the legislature. I don't know if there's middle ground, but I am quite sure that what they're trying to do is make us pick between extremes because that's where we are these days. That's where Roy Cooper is. And that is where the Republican Party under Trump is as well. And I just don't believe you should have to pick between those two things. I think that there's probably a middle road.
Kind of like the truth oftentimes, right? It's somewhere in the middle. And I think in this case, a solution is going to be a lot more moderate than what's being proposed on either side, and one that respects localities and their own individual choices and how they choose to govern themselves, while still understanding that we don't have like county borders or barriers, physical ones, wherein, okay, Mecklenburg may want to behave that way, yet the counties next door don't. And so by Mecklenburg's dereliction of duty in actually apprehending this individual, that he could have committed a crime in the neighboring county, and what could they have done about it if Mecklenburg was the one that was actually tracking him initially. It's a messy situation. Immigration, we've talked about this numerous times on the podcast. It's incredibly messy. I tend to be a lot more sympathetic to local areas deciding for themselves, but recognize very much so that this is we all recognize that this is something that affects more than just that particular county when it comes to this issue.
It does.
But so according to DHS, you have 2,028 homicides. I don't know if this last year, so that would be 2018, by illegal aliens, and less than 400 people died by mass shootings. We're not discounting any of those lives in any ways. But to me, I mean, it's clear that illegal immigration is a problem that needs to be addressed by this nation. And I think its refusal to do so by Congress is creating a backlash. I think it's exacerbating the problem of Congress not dealing with this issue, because I think, you know, we talk about the federal government needs to do this, the federal government needs to do that, but they're also not dealing with this issue from a congressional level. And that's creating some of the problems we have in our states.
Totally.
Congress is not dealing with this issue. Over 2,000 homicides last year in 2018 from illegal immigration. I mean, that's a big issue.
Yeah, so the statistic aside, you are absolutely correct that Congress has abdicated their responsibility on this issue, and it is leading to chaos across the country, where now you have a war going on between the federal government and the executive branch and, you know, the agencies, so the DOJ in this case, and states. And there's no Congress in the middle legislating on immigration law. I think it's completely insane.
Yeah.
And Congress should be completely ashamed of themselves. They're supposed to represent their states in Congress and come up with law, and they just won't do it because everybody are cowards. They're cowards, and they're just going with the political winds.
Yeah, it kind of makes me like nostalgic for the yesteryear of immigration reform under Bush and McCain, when they kind of carved out that bill, ended up getting sabotaged. But I thought that would have been a good program because it made room for guest workers and it created more border enforcement. But
Congress can't do that anymore.
Yeah,
we've lost the way on those middle of the road solutions where you have to give and take a little bit, and then we're just sort of left again with really, really polar choices. And it's going to break down our politics. I think that the immigration issue in particular is going to keep getting more red hot until Congress does something. I'm afraid they won't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back to that middle of the road thing that we were talking about. It's a theme that I think we're seeing in culture. We're seeing it in politics. If politics is downstream from culture, it started in the cultural side of things, where battle lines were constantly drawn, us versus them, rather than looking for this sort of coherent, cohesive American story that should unify us despite all of our, you know, differences that should be celebrated. It's just a big mess sometimes. Yeah. But then you hear amazing stories about great Americans, including great Americans who like the idea of us buying Greenland. And I'm one of those. I want Greenland for my birthday.
USA. USA.
So that's my, somewhat clunky transition over to our next topic, which
I thought that was very skillful.
Well, thank you. I was waiting for someone to compliment that. So President Trump recently, he was getting ready to go to Denmark and have a discussion about other things, and was preparing for that trip. And he decided to, of course, you know, tweet out, which is how he proposes policies, that we should go ahead and purchase Greenland. It would be a great addition to the American portfolio. So what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, man, I kind of feel, all right, so two things. One, would love to have Greenland in the American territories. I think that would just be cool, just on an instinct and gut level. Mm-hmm. Why not, right? But then I think maybe the realest check is I feel like we're just having enough trouble governing what we currently have. And, you know, there's Puerto Rico as well. Like, wow, what a mess. I would say I would like to see an acquisition of Greenland and then a federal program to populate it that will allow millennials to forgive their student debt by settling in Greenland.
That's a good idea.
How about that?
I love it.
You know? No,
genius.
No sending them a check or whatever to forgive it, but they have to move to Greenland to populate it.
I don't think you're going to get a ton of takers, Steven. So.
You know, I think you might. I think the culture might adhere very nicely to millennials' values. They can have their little tiny homes and their sort of craftsman-style houses that they like so much. And boomers will support it as well, because millennials will leave.
I think you'd get a lot of boomerang millennials who would just kind of bounce back once they got and saw the climate.
But if the earth is going to be ending in like 10 to 12 years if we don't address climate change, according to Beto and AOC, I think, then Greenland would be like the perfect place to start a new world, because it's going to stay cooler longer, right?
I'm all for it. And if your audience is not liking me right now, I would say that I volunteer to be one of the first to go.
You volunteer.
I volunteer. Me and my family will be some of the original settlers for the new Greenland
territory. They're
going
to have to figure out a way to, I don't know, get tons of avocados over there, though, for the avocado toast.
Free trade.
Yeah, there you go. So as long as we don't level tariffs against Mexico, I guess we could probably just easily get them over to Greenland.
Can we point out how funny it is that Tom Cotton was part of the conversations being had about buying Greenland, that Tom Cotton suggested to Trump that he should buy Greenland, and he even met with the Danish ambassador, Tom Cotton of Arkansas.
Yeah.
That is, I'm trying to imagine what that meeting was like. Like, what is it like when that sort of stern senator sits down and he just like, hey, you know, it's we're thinking about buying your massive island.
It's time.
I'm sure pitching that to Trump is, you know, you kind of go in there and say, this is going to something that's going to make America great, and he'll run with it. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he's kind of been, I think he's legitimately excited about the idea of Greenland being part of our U.S. territory, and possibly what should be the, you know, you think of, should Greenland be the 51st state, kind of step over Puerto Rico and those people that want statehood for D.C.? I mean, is Greenland that 51st state? I don't know.
Yeah, I would say that would seem a little strange to kind of frog hop over the other people who don't have that state representation.
To recommend Greenland even more, I was reading this newsletter by Jonah Goldberg, who used to be with National Review and is now beginning his own media venture. But he said Greenland, there are other arguments for making Greenland Alaska 2.0. He hasn't done a scientific survey, but he's confident that many of the people mocking the idea are of the type who see climate change as a great threat. So it's, you know, Greenland's full of minerals, reindeer, and other parts of a nutritious breakfast. And it's also got oil and gas, precious gems, and probably some really cool fossils. I mean, can you imagine all
minerals
the little...
Minerals and millennials.
All the aspiring paleontologists.
We can have the best mineral lamps on the entire market.
Awesome. I like it already. I really, really think we should proceed. So anyways, we are about out of time, but... we appreciate you coming on the show, and how can people connect with you and follow what you're doing with Young Voices and just with the Examiner and everything?
Sure. You can send me your hate tweets or your shows of support to Stephen_Kent89. That's Stephen with a PH _Kent89. And you can find my website, StephenDKent.com, for, you know, media, op-eds, writing, all that. And I live here in Raleigh. Love it. And it's been great hanging out with y'all, talking on Civitalk.
Yeah, thank Absolutely. You so much for joining us. Have a good week, everyone. And if you have any questions or comments, go ahead and send us an email at radio@nccivitas.org. You all take care.
Thank you.